Good evening, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Tectonic. My name is Mark Hurst. I'll be your host for the next hour here on WFMU, Freeform Station of the Nation, from Jersey City and the great state of New Jersey. Happy to be here. Happy Memorial Day to everyone in the U.S. celebrating. Hope you've had a good, relaxing, meaningful, some sort of positive Memorial Day. And if you're outside the U.S., happy regular Monday, I guess. Wherever you're from, wherever you're listening, whenever you're listening, thanks for joining. I've got a great interview to share with you. On this show, we're going to be talking about Linux. Now, just hold on a second. If you're thinking, wait, is he going into techie stuff? Sort of, but not terribly so. If you're not a techie, don't worry. I'm gonna explain everything to you. And if you are a techie, you already probably have your thoughts pre-prepared when I say the word Linux. So let's talk about this for a second. I'm gonna have someone on in a few minutes. Who we're going to say his name is Peter. That's not his real name, but he is a security expert. He lives in Switzerland. We're going to establish that at the beginning of the interview. But he knows a lot about Linux. And I have been meaning to do a show on Linux for some time now. And here's why. And let me say it this way, just in case you are unfamiliar with Linux. If you use a Windows PC, it runs an operating system called Windows that's made by Microsoft, okay? If you use an Apple MacBook or Mac, what are the other models? Mac Mini, Mac Pro, you're running the operating system from Apple called OS X, which is spelled OS X. Some people call it OS X. The operating system is the software that runs the whole machine, whether it's Windows or OS X. And similarly, if you use an iPhone, it's running an operating system called iOS. And if you are using an Android phone, that's the operating system for smartphones made by Google. In other words, any kind of computing device you use has some sort of what's called operating system. Okay. For years now, there has been an alternative to the Apple, Microsoft, Google choices out there, because all of those have terrible trade-offs that are always falling in favor of these giant companies. There is an alternative out there, both for laptops and for smartphones, that's called Linux. It's free and it's open source, which we're going to talk about in the interview, which means that programmers out there can inspect the code, can inspect down to the files of the computer code that runs the operating system. So if there's anything bad happening inside the guts of the operating system, they can see it. And in fact, they can even write a new version of the operating system. And so Linux has been around for a while, has this global community of developers that are all excited about it. It has a global community of users, people who are excited about using, and sometimes those are the same the same people. But you don't have to be a developer to like Linux. There are plenty of people out there who are not computer programmers who use Linux instead of Windows or Mac OS X on their laptops. They use Linux on their smartphone instead of iOS and Android. And so I wanted to talk to an expert in Linux in advising people on which Linux version to install and even helping them to install. This is someone who has very practical experience in dealing with Linux. And this is this gentleman we're going to call Peter. And I hope by the end of the interview, no matter what your level of technical expertise, you will be at least somewhat enthusiastic or at least intrigued by the possibility of an alternative to the big tech operating systems, that you will be somewhat interested in maybe learning a little bit more about Linux. Because you know what? I am interested in Linux. I have not switched over just yet. I'm still stuck in Apple. I feel like the frog who's being slowly boiled in that proverbial situation, which I think is not actually scientifically accurate. But the saying goes that if you want to boil a frog alive, you do it slowly. So the pot gets, the water in the pot gets hotter and hotter just gradually until the frog is no longer able to jump out. And that's how I feel using all Apple stuff. I mean, just little by little, Apple is turning to the same growth at any cost kinds of strategies, let's say, and tactics that Google and Microsoft are always pursuing. And then there was an announcement from Microsoft just in the last week about new surveillance that they are adding to Windows. So they're very proud to announce new surveillance in Windows. And if I have time after the interview, I'm going to talk to you about that as well, because it always seems like these companies are looking for more ways to harvest and exploit our personal data on the machines that we are supposed to be the owners of, that we are supposed to have control of. And these companies are asserting their control over our machines, over our data. And that's why something like Linux is so important, because it's not owned by a big tech corporation. And it's not beholden to that profit motive and that growth at any cost, Silicon Valley madness. So with that said, I want to go ahead and play this interview with quote-unquote Peter in Switzerland. We're going to talk about Linux. And don't worry, it's not going to get super technical. So if you're not a techie, I hope you will stick with the show all the way through to the end of the hour. I think that you'll enjoy it, and I think you'll learn something. I know I did. I learned a lot. The other really important thing I want to say, I always say before the interview, go to the playlist. You can join listeners in commenting on the interview, which I hope you will do as always. But there is an additional reason to go to the playlist this evening, and that is that we go through a lot of somethingsomething.com, somethingsomething.org, a lot of website addresses in this interview. Every single one of them is on the playlist. So if you hear one of them, we rattle off the name of some organization and you say, how do you spell that? Go to the playlist. It's there. And there are links and there are little summaries of which each one does. The playlist this evening is a wealth of resources about alternatives to big tech operating systems. So how do you get to the playlist? You go to WFMU.org and click playlist and comments. Or you can go to tectonic.fm. tectonic.fm and find the playlist link for May 27, 2024. And that playlist link is up as I speak. So wherever you'd like to go, wfmu.org or tectonic.fm, find that playlist link and you can follow along with all of these resources that Peter and I are going to talk about. Let's go ahead and listen now to my interview with security expert Peter talking about why we should all switch to Linux here on Tectonic on WFMU. Peter Fung, welcome to Tectonic.
Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you on the show. I want to acknowledge a couple of things before we get started. One is that Peter Fung is not your real name. But as you say, names don't matter. Knowledge is what matters. And I'm looking forward to learning something from you and sharing that with listeners. The other thing is that you're based in Switzerland and you are a privacy advocate with strong knowledge in IT, security, privacy, and the various tools associated with those. I want to start with Linux. You experienced a transformation a number of years ago. You were using Windows computers. I know you repaired Windows computers for a while as a teenager, and then you went to university and you were on a Mac for a while. And then you got intrigued by this thing called Linux. Peter, let's first talk about what your motivation was to get off of Windows and the Mac operating system and pursue a more privacy-oriented path. What are some of the potential pitfalls or challenges that people might be facing, even if they're not fully aware of it, when they're using Microsoft or Apple operating systems?
Well, first of all, I would say we need to do like a big distinction, which is the distinction between a commercial software and open source software. Because without that, you know, listener won't understand actually what's behind Linux. A commercial software is a piece of software that has some kind of property, right? There's a company behind. The code normally is closed. What this means is that basically only the company knows what are the functions of the code in which the software is written. And if you copy that or anything, you can be legally pursued with. So you can actually have problems with the law. Open source software instead are actually completely free, and the code behind is completely free. Free and open. What that means is that any developer around the world can actually take the code or a piece of code, change that, and publish it again for the community. And of course, I don't hide you that with this technique, the code is more robust, is more secure, and actually more reliable also. Because you can imagine, I mean, you have the best brains and developer around the world that actually improve the code and the software itself without actually pursuing the goal of making money out of it. So this is one big definition and distinction we need to do. So Linux is an open source software. Windows and Mac are not. So this is the big step. And to answer your question, actually, that was one of my motivation and that makes me switch from macOS and Windows to Linux. So I wanted something really robust and also that didn't have like a company behind with, at the time I thought, like secrets or any other purpose such as advertising or spying on you or, you know, taking your data, etc. So I really wanted to switch into something that was open to the public, so really transparent. And the only solution actually that we have currently to avoid using Windows and Mac is Linux. So the switch for me was very clear and quick.
That's really helpful. So we have Microsoft, which makes Windows, and we have Apple, which makes Mac OS.
Indeed.
And then on the mobile side, that is to say the surveillance device / surveillance phone side, we have Google, which makes Android, which is the operating system for Android surveillance phones. And then we have what's called iOS from Apple for the iPhone surveillance phone.
Indeed.
Some people may want an alternative to the surveillance, the advertising, as you say, the corporate profit motivations to nudge people into some behavior or another in these operating systems, whether it's Windows, Mac OS, Android, or iOS. Those are the four main big commercial operating systems. As you say, they're driven by profit, and the code is totally invisible to the users or even to developers outside of those companies. So
Correct.
No one knows how they're being spied on. Although I will say Microsoft often makes these giant announcements, and Google also, these giant announcements, we're happy to announce this new feature where we will be spying on you in this new way. And everybody claps at the press event,
Indeed.
Which is always astonishing to me. So here we have Microsoft, Google, and Apple making these corporate-owned, for-profit, closed-source operating systems. And then you're saying the one alternative that's open source, that does not have a company behind it, that's not built for spying and exploitation, is Linux.
Yeah, absolutely. Perfect. Just one quick note. Also, Google has also like OS based for PC, which is installed on Chromium laptop, for example.
Yes, thank you for bringing that up. That's right. Chromebooks are these laptops that are built completely, designed and built completely with Google code from, as they say, the bottom of the stack to the top of the stack. And it's all surveillance from beginning to end.
It is completely.
So, I would not recommend even touching a Chromebook. now, talk us through Linux a little bit, Peter. If someone has not used a Linux PC or a Linux-based smartphone, what is it like to use a completely different operating system from a Windows or Mac machine?
Well, first of all, we should talk about needs. When we use a PC, anyone use a PC has certain kind of needs, and those needs are met by the operative system, being this Linux, Windows, or Mac. So I would say, first of all, we should identify which kind of needs the average user has. I'll make you some example. First of all, browsing the internet is one. Answering, writing emails is the second thing. Maybe chatting or seeing the news on anything, which normally is done through browsing the web, or modifying files, creating folders, etc. And maybe video calling with friends or making phone calls, maybe doing some games, playing some games, and writing maybe documents, etc. So I just exposed like 6-7 needs that an average user has. Well, those needs are perfectly answered by Linux, as well as done with Mac and Windows, of course, but without actually the big eye that is spying on you. So in the end, the big switch, it's a mental switch. People need to understand the needs and then understand that their needs are perfectly answered by those softwares. So the switch is not a big deal. But people are, you know, not taken by a lot of fears, thinking that maybe, I switch on something that, you know, people aren't using, so other people are not using, so I cannot, like, ask for advisors or anything. I cannot search on Google for answer. But that's not true. Actually, if you look on internet, as you would do with macOS or Windows or any problem you have with those operative systems, you can find any answer on Linux, even more, actually. So the thing is, we need to first realize that before switching in practice, in the real world, you need to switch your mental attitude towards an alternative. And this is not only true with operative system, with anything in privacy and technology. So if you want to revolutionize your life, actually first you need to revolutionize your thoughts, your minds. You need to first become aware of the alternative, knowing your needs and why you would switch to that. And when you know the why, then you can discover the how and put that in practice.
Oh, that's so well said. Okay, so, and it's similar to something I say on the show a lot, which is that the first step to any change we want to make is awareness.
Definitely.
We have to be aware of what's out there. And here we have, as you're saying, a problem with the current commercial operating systems. Again, whether you're using a laptop computer or some sort of a surveillance device like an iPhone or an Android phone, the companies are spying on you. As people get awareness of that problem, then they need awareness that there is an alternative, as you say, Linux. And then with the awareness of the problem and the solution, maybe then they make a decision to switch. Here I'm talking to myself, Peter, because I've been thinking for years, at some point I have to get off of Mac and I gotta get myself over to Linux. So this is helping me as well. So let's say you're a person who's ready to make that switch. And again, I'm in this category. What is the first step that one has to take in order to start switching over from Mac or Windows over to Linux?
So I would say, first of all, spend some time to research which Linux version is right for you.
Let me stop you there. Sorry. Which Linux version is right for you? So let's just establish for the listeners, Peter, there are many different versions of Linux. There are versions for smartphones and versions for laptops, but just for your laptop, whichever laptop you want to use, there are multiple versions of Linux. These are often called distributions or distros for short. There's a bunch of different ones out there. How do we go about researching which Linux version is right for us?
Well, I can share with you my experience. What I did, I went to probably the biggest website, distrowatch.com. On DistroWatch, you have basically all or almost all versions of Linux, hundreds of them. Then I created like a spreadsheet and I looked at the most top 50, top 70 most diffused version of Linux, and I wrote down in that spreadsheet What was the key point of that particular distro? Was that like more secure, more reliable, more easy to use, et cetera, et cetera? What is the company behind if there's one, et cetera, et cetera? And then I put that all of that into a filter system on my spreadsheet, and I basically filter that for security, reliability, and ease of use. And then I basically start to install those versions and just try them. Once after all, you will discover that some distro are more near to your needs, to your expectations, et cetera, et cetera. So once you actually compare by trying to install those versions and use them, you will discover actually a big difference. So in practice, and at a certain point, you will take your decision because you have enough knowledge, practical knowledge, to know which version is actually answering your needs.
Just in case someone doesn't want to set up a spreadsheet to analyze the top 50 distros on distrowatch.com, I admire your thoroughness, Peter, in going through that process. But if someone wanted to just download a pretty well-known, pretty solid distro to start out with, what's one of the big ones that a lot of people use and are pretty happy with?
It's a very hard question to answer. It also depends on the machine you have. I'll make you an example. If your machine is very old, there are some distro that are very light and makes your machine very speedy. So, for example, I can answer, Ubuntu, because, you know, any people answer Ubuntu because it's there, it's very simple, a lot of people are using that. But if you install Ubuntu on a very old machine, maybe 7 or 8 years old or 10 years old, well, it will result in a very slow PC. So, you know, the experience will probably make people, you know, abandon that kind of a dream of using Linux. So that is not a good answer, actually. But let's assume you have a very modern PC of like 2 years ago, 3 years ago. So forget about, you know, getting like a light version of Linux, and you want to simply have like an easy version, you know, that can just approach you. Well, I won't answer you Ubuntu. Despite it's a very good project, and of course it's very simple, but I would more answer get elementary OS on board, or Zorin OS, or even at least Pop OS. Those three are actually very, very easy for the user.
Okay, let me make sure I got these names right. So you're saying you would not necessarily recommend Ubuntu, and this is one that's very well known.
Indeed.
And I'll put all these names in the show notes so people can take a look at them. But Ubuntu, you're saying not so much. Instead, you're saying elementary OS.
Indeed.
The second one was Zorin, which is Z-O-R-I-N. And the third one was Pop OS, P-O-P-O-S. And again, I'll put these names on the playlist so people can take a look. That's really helpful. I hadn't heard of Zorin or Pop OS before. So those would be three possibilities, as you say, if people have fairly recent hardware that can run these. The next question is, let's say we've chosen a Linux version. Someone sees the download link there and they think, if I click download and I start installing this thing, my whole life is going to change. All of my processes, all of my tools are going to have to change. I'm going to have to learn new interfaces. It can seem overwhelming. What would you say to someone who's considering a switch but is scared of the investment at that stage?
It's very simple. There's one answer. Like nowadays, I would say 70% or even 80% of the tools we use are cloud-based, are based on cloud. So what does that mean? Is that when something is installed in the cloud, all you can access with a browser. So any machine or operative system you use, whether it's Linux or Mac, etc., well, the experience will be the same. I'll make an example. Let's assume you use a tool for marketing, or I don't know, you constantly look at your Gmail, right? Most people will use Gmail or within the app of Android or by using a browser on your computer. So the experience will be exactly the same when you use Linux and access through Linux. So this is actually not a problem. Of course, there are a bunch of software that you need to, you know, people use that you need to have installed on the machine, such as, for example, Office, right? Office is one of the things people say, oh, yeah, but, you know, I'm used to DocX and a spreadsheet through Microsoft software, et cetera, et cetera. That's okay. Fine. There's no actually Microsoft software Office on Linux, but there are valid alternatives. There are three very robust alternatives on Linux that you can install. And guess what? They are fully compatible with any format that you will save your files through Office.
So if someone sends you a Word file, Excel file, or a PowerPoint file,
you can easily open it. Absolutely.
No problem. Okay.
And there's a big difference. They are free. You don't pay for that.
And they're free and open source.
Indeed.
And they're not constantly adding new spying features.
Indeed. That's maybe, sorry to interrupt you, that's maybe one of the things that people don't grasp. Open source is also free. And it's a big thing, because if you calculate all the money you spend with macOS and Windows, wow, you can have valid alternative for free. So once you install Linux, you have an app store where you have access to thousands or hundreds of thousands sometimes of software that you can freely use for your needs. And that's a big thing. It's not a small thing, right?
That's not a small thing. And one of the fees that people pay is to Microsoft just to use Word, Excel, and PowerPoint. And now Microsoft is moving to an annual subscription.
Indeed.
Just to use those tools. So it's great that there are alternatives. You said there are three. I think one of them is OpenOffice.
That's
is correct. That right?
That's correct.
Okay, and what are the other two?
Well, first of all, there are LibreOffice. LibreOffice is probably more important and free than OpenOffice. It's at the core, initially on the initial project, there was only OpenOffice, but then they basically a fork has been created because the two founders were not having the same version. So actually at the moment, the most free and transparent in terms of code and reliable is LibreOffice, not OpenOffice. And the third one is only Office. Also only Office is a valid alternative.
And we're back. If you are just tuning in, you're listening to Tectonic on WFMU. My name is Mark Hurst. I'm your host. We are halfway through my interview with Peter, not his real name, based in Switzerland. We're talking about why we should all switch to Linux. Our laptops, our desktops, our smartphones, and anything else that runs an operating system. We should all be on Linux. I hope you're starting to get intrigued if you've been listening from the beginning. We were having a good conversation, a lively conversation, over on the comment board. Go to WFMU.org and click playlist and comments. As I said at the top of the interview, I really recommend checking the playlist for all of the links to all the sites that we're listing in the interview. And again, you can also find that playlist link at tectonic.fm, T-E-C-H, tonic.fm. Let's go ahead and listen to the second half of my interview with Peter talking about Linux here on Tectonic on WFMU. Fantastic. LibreOffice, OpenOffice, OnlyOffice. I like it. Here's the next question I've got for you, Peter. People listening might say, okay, I'm intrigued to give this a shot. I know which Linux version I would try out and download. I'm confident that I would be able to open my Excel files and so on. But a lot of people, unfortunately, Peter, you and I both don't like this, but it's the way the world is going. A lot of people are forced to use Google Docs, Google Sheets, and other sorts of files that are hosted in the Google Cloud, which is fully surveilled, of course, by Google. With that said, it is helpful to have some way to have a document online where multiple people can collaborate. Let's say there is a sheet online where different people are filling out data. Multiple people can edit the document. That's helpful. That's good technology. It's just unfortunate that the dominant platform is one that is surveilled by a $2 trillion company for their own purposes. Is there a platform out there where you can set up an alternative to a Google Sheet, just to take that as an example, where maybe it's open source, there's not a profit motive or a surveillance motive behind it, but people can still have that functionality of being able to edit a document together in real time? Is there something like that?
Absolutely. There is, and it's also very stable and reliable, and it's a very good platform actually that does all of that and even more, and it's called Nextcloud. With Nextcloud, you can actually, the company needs to set up a server and install Nextcloud. But once it's installed, you can give access to even thousands of users. And within Nextcloud, you have tools for writing letters, for doing spreadsheet presentation, talking to each other, chatting. There's a huge amount of software, all open source and all for free. And this actually comes very handy and very, very easy to install actually for any company. So the alternative is there. It's just a matter of willingness for the company to switch to a privacy respecting alternative.
Okay, so that's Nextcloud. So companies and teams can set that up. What if you're an individual? I want to set up a sheet for, I don't know, a sign up for a potluck or something that I'm doing with some friends. Is there a open source platform out there somewhere where I can just quickly set up a sheet for my use?
Well, the answer is no. And I will explain you why. Because if you would do that, it would mean that you need to trust a company to put your files on, which is against privacy. Actually, when we talk about privacy, you should think about ownership of data. You should think, and people should think, on who is owning my data? When I open like a spreadsheet or anything and goes to the cloud, who is owning that cloud? In that moment, that particular company is granting me access, but de facto, that company has your files and can, you know, deleting your accesses, can copy that file, can sell those files, etc., etc., etc. That's why I was talking about Nextcloud, because with Nextcloud, you can set up your own server in the company you want, in the hosting you want, in the way it's hosted, so the files are stored in the way you want, and therefore you can, of course, have ownership of those data, which is not the case with cloud. So what you're asking is actually, is there a system where I can, you know, give the files to a company and fully trust that company? Well, so the answer is no. And even the new company, you know, talk about privacy and anything, well, you should ask yourself, okay, but to which degree do I want to keep my privacy? To which degree do I trust that company? And for how long also? Because companies change year after year. They get merged, they get acquired, they change their vision, they change their pricing, etc., etc. So here the question is, do I want to trust another one to do the job, or do I want to learn and do the job myself? And it is the same question with anything in privacy, anything. So a certain degree, we need to, you know, make a compromise and decide, you know, how much I want to complicate my life by, you know, doing myself, and how much I want to trust a certain company. So the one advice I can give you for that, when you pick a company or decide upon a company, is ask yourself, what is that company asking me in terms of private data to set up an account? Let's take Telegram, for example.
Just to interrupt, Telegram is a mobile app that promises totally secure messaging from person to person or within groups. Telegram's main competitor in that space is an app called Signal, which promises the same thing. The difference being that Telegram is not open source, whereas Signal is. Sorry to interrupt. Tell us about Telegram.
Well, I was saying one of the key questions you should ask yourself is, what is the company, my provider, my chosen company that provide that software, is asking me when I create an account? So that's a key question you should ask yourself. And as I said, a lot of people are switching from WhatsApp to Telegram, you know, thinking, oh, that's super private. They told me that it's end-to-end encryption, even if 99% people don't understand that, you know, end-to-end encryption is useless if the owner knows the key. So let's assume it's end-to-end encryption to Telegram, but you know, the owner owns the key to open the door. That's not privacy, after all. So first of all. Second of all, would you trust like Pavel Durov, the entrepreneur behind Telegram, which is one of the leaders in WEF, in the World Economic Forum, you know, new leaders? Well, the answer is no. And as a third factor, most important, is what kind of information or personal information is Telegram asking you? And day one information it's asking you is your phone number. So once you give the phone number to Telegram to sign up an account, and Signal is just the same, well, your phone number is tied up to your real identity in your state. So Think about it. I make an account, I register my phone number, and let's assume Telegram or Signal or any other company you know acting the same way is giving that information to your government. Well, for the government, it's 1 + 1, right? Immediately tied up all your conversation, because Telegram and Signal have the key to decrypt those conversations, of course, will have all your conversation tied up to your real identity. So there's no privacy. It's very simple.
Is there a messaging app that is private? I mean, Signal and Telegram are presenting themselves as the alternative to Mark Zuckerberg's privacy-destroying WhatsApp and Facebook Messenger. If Signal and Telegram don't really provide privacy, who does?
Well, there are many very valid alternatives. For example, Element. Element is one. The website is element.io, if I'm not mistaken. And Session also is a good valid alternative. So they only require like an email address to sign up an account. That's it. It's the only information they're asking you. So, of course, an email address, you can just create like a temporary email address. So you can even create like a private one without giving any information of yourself. So that's the first thing. But there's one thing to note. Don't give that for granted. So Element or even Session or any other software may change in the future. So you need to keep an eye on those. You need to maybe once in a while, like every 6 months, make a check if the policy changed, and now you're asking for private information, et cetera, et cetera. So normally Element is based on a private network that is called Metrics. So it shouldn't, you know, Element shouldn't affect by that change. But that's like a big rule you should keep in mind, right? To always check that company. Because it doesn't mean that if, you know, 6 months ago you joined Element and it was a private solution, it's like 6 months it will be the same company. So keep an eye on that.
Good point. Okay, let's talk about smartphones. Here is a device most people carry around in their pocket or in a bag or something that's with them at all times. And as Tectonic listeners know, whether you have an Android phone or an iPhone, you really don't have privacy if you're carrying around. And I say this as an iPhone owner, so I'm aware that I'm speaking to myself on this. Android phones are much worse in terms of privacy than iPhones, but even iPhones are not, I would say, not particularly private. It seems like it would be easier to switch to a private smartphone than it would be to switch to, let's say, Linux on your laptop. Is that right? Can someone solve the smartphone privacy challenge by simply buying a better Linux-based phone? And if so, what do you recommend that people look at buying?
So, Mark, that's a big chapter you're opening here. So first of all, we need to note one thing. Privacy is a one or none rule. It's a 360 degrees approach that you should have. So it's not about buying the right smartphone or using the right computer or using Linux or not. So it doesn't make sense if you have half of your conversation on Linux and they are private, and then you have half of your conversation on Android and they are not. So first thing to note is this. Second thing to note about smartphone is that you use those devices basically almost 24 hours a day. Even when you sleep, they're recording. So it's like a device that we carry around with us all the time. So versus computer, where of course you open your laptop, you do your communication, and then when you stop that, you just close it and you like go away. With smartphone, we have those devices around us, with us all the time. And the big problem and difference versus computer are the sensors that are on those devices. So here we need to make like a big distinction between hardware and software, right? Because you talk about smartphone, you know, being private or not. First of all, we need to make people understand that there's a big difference between the two things. A smartphone is, first of all, a device, so like hardware components inside it, sensors, etc., etc., and with a operative system installed on it. First note on the hardware. If I ask yourself, in how many components you can put apart your smartphones, what would you answer me?
How many components make up one smartphone?
Yeah, that you can open yourself easily.
If I opened my I wouldn't even know how to open my iPhone, but if I could somehow pry it open, I don't know. It seems pretty integrated. They don't want you switching out components.
Well, it's two components. It's the phone and the SIM card. That's it. If you're lucky, you can remove the battery if you have the right model. If you have a Fairphone, for example, you can maybe have like 6-7 different components that you can take out from the smartphone. So that's
Fairphone, F-A-I-R phone.
Indeed. Another thing we should note on the hardware level is the sensor. So you should ask yourself, how many and which sensors are on my smartphone? Let me give you an example. Like antennas, of course, camera, phones. And I put like plural because it's not just one microphone, but it's different microphones on one single device. Gyroscope, compass, so we have light sensor, we have temperature sensor, barometers, digital fingerprint, etc., etc. Well, something like between 14 and 20 different sensors on one single device. It's de facto like a surveillance device, because with the excuse of having all those nice functionality, you know, turning your smartphone and blah, 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 they excuse the fact that they put like very complex and powerful sensors on one single device that people carry around 24 hours a day.
I think most people would expect if they turn off their phone that it's no longer listening to them. But I know that's not the case.
That's not the case. And it's not the case because the software is programmed, is coded in a way to give you an output. It turns off the screen of your computer, of your smartphone.
So that it looks like it's off.
Indeed. It looks like, we need to understand what the word off means. If by off you mean that the screen is black, well, yes. But if you mean that the sensor are not capturing the information anymore, well, that's completely wrong. Because the software that is built in a way that actually some of the information give you the impressions that are actually off, but some of the information keep on being captured by the environment. Maybe the voice when you're talking, maybe the camera, so the image that the camera is capturing, maybe the information of the GPS inside your smartphone. So the question is, how much do I trust the company that when I switch off something on my smartphone, actually the sensor are not capturing the information anymore? Would you trust Google, Microsoft, etc., to do that for you when they have like huge amount of battles where they had like problem with privacy and leakage of data and usage of those data, etc.? Do you really trust those companies? Because actually, to me, the answer is absolutely not. Not, I'm not trusting that actually that piece of software would turn off the smartphone. That's what I'm saying, that the second criteria is to actually remove the battery, getting a model that allows for that. Because if you do that as an interruption of current, you're actually turning off the sensors, killing it, basically.
Okay, so Fairphone allows you to remove the battery, remove the camera, and have access to those modules. Is Fairphone also Linux-based? Is the software open source?
No, at the moment, Fairphone is delivering their device with Android installed. So you need to switch actually to Linux, of course. So this is the second thing about software.
So if someone gets a Fairphone, the hardware is nice and modular, but the software is still full of Google surveillance. They then have to install Linux, or can you buy a Linux Fairphone?
There are some services where you can buy a Fairphone with installed like a private OS. That's possible. I do it on my company. There's Murena project. The Murena project is actually doing that. But I need to point like a difference. Linux on smartphones comes in a very few versions. So one of that is Ubuntu Touch. That's a Linux-based, pure Linux-based operating system OS for a smartphone. But most of the OS out there are actually a version of Android, but without Google. Graphene OS, for example, or Lineage OS, or even Kali X OS, they are all projects that actually comes from a version of Android where Google has been completely removed. And not only Google, a lot of function has been added. For example, like the use of a VPN integrated. Some of the function, for example, has been written so not to capt some information from the sensors, etc., etc. Particularly, Graphene OS is one of the current most stable and private OS in the world. So to answer your question, you could buy a phone from Fairphone, which, as I mentioned, have all the components detachable, so you can do whatever you want, the configuration you want, and the battery is removable. And then install inside Fairphone, your model, Graphene OS, or Calyx, or any other version, or even Ubuntu Touch if you want, if it's compatible. So those are the two aspects. First of all, getting an hardware that is very secure, where the components can be changed, where the battery can be removed. And second of all, installing like an OS that is private and actually do help you keeping your life private.
Okay, so find the privacy-oriented hardware and then find the privacy-oriented software. Well, Peter, this has been so helpful as a very, very introductory look at some of the things people can do if they want to pursue privacy in their digital lives and work. I appreciate you spending this time with us, and I'd love to have you back on again sometime to go into other questions. I want to tell listeners where they can follow up with you. The website is greenwebsolutions.ch, and I'll put a link to that on the playlist as well. Peter Fung, not your real name, thanks again for being on Tectonic, and talk to you again sometime.
Thanks to you, Mark. Thanks for the invitation. Let me know in the future. I would be more than available to get in touch again for another interview.
And we're back. If you are just tuning in, you're listening to Tectonic on WFMU. My name is Mark Hurst. I'll be your host for the remaining 10 minutes on the dot before I turn over Studio A to Dave Mandel, to whom no one holds a candle. He's got a show called It's Complicated. It's a prog rock show. You should listen to it. And then Amanda and Jim the Poets. Jim the Poets. They're multiple Jim the Poets. With Bad Animals coming up after that. And then Daniel Blumen with his eponymous show. Just stay tuned to WFMU is my advice to you. Thanks again to Peter, quote unquote, in Switzerland for being my guest and walking us through so many different tools, platforms, organizations, giving us alternatives to the hegemonic, surveillance-oriented, growth-at-any-cost platforms that are coming out of Silicon Valley from Google, Apple, and Microsoft. These are, as you heard in the interview, for the most part, Linux-based. Not everything was Linux we covered, but most of it was. And as I said at the beginning of the interview, I hope you are now intrigued by the possibility of escaping at least in part. Not that you would tomorrow do a full changeover to Linux, but as somebody said on the playlist, maybe do it gradually. Just try a little bit here, a little bit there, maybe with one device, and see how it goes. You can find the comments. There are many comments, many suggestions, and some extra pointers to other platforms on the playlist, and I'm going to tell you again, the comments are a great resource, and the links that I have posted on the top of the playlist are really helpful because they're a list of every link that Peter referenced during the show. And again, you can find that at WFMU.org, or you can find it at tectonic.fm, T-E-C-H, tonic.fm, and find the playlist link for May 27, 2024. I have a couple of last things I want to say. And one is an invitation to you listeners. So stay tuned for the next 8 minutes to hear that. I just want to say one other thing about Windows, as promised at the before I started the interview. It's funny. I said in the interview, every so often, it seems like these big tech companies are coming out with press events where they announce, we are going to surveil you in a new way. And everyone claps and they get a lot of publicity. And about a day after, I mean, it was like 24 or 48 hours after I recorded the interview saying those words, Microsoft came out with a press event where they said that Windows PCs, I'm reading from this social media post I put on the playlist, Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella says, Windows PCs will have a photographic memory feature called Recall that will remember and understand everything you do on your computer by taking constant screenshots. Okay, great job, Microsoft. So now they are just coming out and saying it out loud. We are going to be taking screenshots every few seconds of whatever is on the screen of your Windows computer. And of course, they hasten to add, it's totally optional. You can turn it off. All the data is stored locally. We're definitely not surveilling it. And, you know, maybe some of that is actually true for the moment. But as I have said so many times about other technologies, it's always announced by the company as optional and totally secure, and they would never think of turning it into an exploitation of your data. And then little by little by little by little, the imperative of growth at any cost takes charge, and several years down the road, Microsoft is just saying, well, everybody has gotten habituated to it, so yeah, we're taking screenshots of your screen, and we are processing that, and what are you going to do? Not use Windows? Good luck. You have no choice. It's inevitable. And by the way, it's just easier if you just relax and let us exploit all of your data. I mean, that's the script that we've heard for so many other big tech technologies, and I expect this is going to happen as well. I'm just surprised that they're coming out and being so forward about it. We will be taking screenshots of your screen. So any website you go to that you feel is sensitive or private or personal of some nature, yeah, that's going to be in screenshots. Any password that you type to your bank site, you know, if it's actually revealed on the screen, that's going to be covered in those screenshots. And if a hacker gets in touch with that data on your PC, all of that is available to them. Everything that you've done in your computer, it's just amazing. And as the person on social media said in comment to the recall feature, Linux is so back, baby. And I agree. That is one more reason to start looking into Linux. Okay, I have just a couple of minutes. I want to give an invitation. Sometime soon, in the next 2-3 weeks, I want to have a show dedicated to you, the listeners. And I've done this in the past. It's a questions episode where I'm going to try to answer whatever questions you send me. So if you have a question about some technology topic, or maybe a follow-up question on a recent or not so recent interview that I've had, or anything that I've covered on Tectonic, what I want you to do is send me your question. My email address is mark@wfmu.org. That's mark@wfmu.org. And please identify how you want me to identify you if I read it on air. I can make you anonymous. I can make you first initial, or I can make you it can be Ken from Hyde Park who's listening tonight. Whatever you want. Just tell me how I can identify you if I read it on air. The other thing you can do, if you prefer, is you can speak your response into an audio recording, and you can email me that audio file, and I can work with that as well. So either the text in the body of an email or an audio file of you speaking your question. Please send me your questions. Try to do it in the next week if you can. And I want to start assembling an episode of my best shot at answering your listener questions. And again, that's going to be coming up sometime soon. So please get in touch. That's one way for me to open this up to listeners and have a bit of a dialogue in that way. I want to thank everybody for tuning in this evening. I hope you have found the Linux episode helpful. I certainly did. And I hope we will do some more how-to shows like that in the future. So, what do I have left to tell you? I just want to remind you that you are listening to the greatest radio station in the world, WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope in New York City and Rockland County at 91.9 FM, and online at WFMU.org. Until next time, friends, I have a bit of homework for you. I want you to avoid Apple, abandon Amazon, forget Facebook, and whatever you do, get off Google. And I have We all have Evan Funk Davies to thank for this next song. This is a song called Under Surveillance by a band called Highly Effective People. Thanks to Evan for bringing this to my attention. Have a great week, everybody.
Good evening, friends, and welcome to the radio show that never sleeps, even on Memorial Day weekend. I hope you, those of you in this country, the U.S., have enjoyed your three-day weekend. I hope everyone has enjoyed. I hope everyone has taken the three-day weekend. I don't care where you are. Take the day off. Anyway, this show is called It's Complicated. I'm here every Monday evening, hot on the heels of the Tectonic program with Mark Hurst. And we bring you an hour of Prague and Prague-adjacent music. Wow. Glad to be here. Glad that you're here. And let's get started. We're going to begin tonight's show with some music from Germany. I'm going to play a band called Frumpy. Frumpy, with an M and a P and a Y. They were around in the early 70s, I think I'm going to say like 1970 to 1973, more or less, were their dates. They reformed later on, I think, like circa 1990. I don't know much about the reformed Frumpy, I'll confess here now. But we're going to hear a track from the original Frumpy. We're going to hear something from their second album, creatively titled Frumpy 2. Again, German group. This will be a track called Duty. About 12 minutes if you're keeping track. See you on the other side.
said my son is sick, he's a deserter.